You're listening to Beyond 1894, a podcast dedicated to updating you on research, innovation, and campus life happening at Louisiana Tech University.
Hey everybody, thank you for joining us on Beyond 1894, the Louisiana Tech University podcast. Today we are joined by Dr. Jordan Lyons and student Gage McClinton of the Aviation Program. So how are you guys doing today?
Highly motivated. Thank you for having us.
Highly motivated. That's great. How are you doing, Gage? There you go.
Good. I don't want to speak for you, Gage.
I'm doing great.
That's good to know. A little bit about each one of you. Jordan, you want to go ahead and tell everybody about sort of what you do here and your role here at Louisiana Tech?
Sure. I am currently an associate professor, and I started at Louisiana Tech as a flight instructor in 2009. And then worked in that role until 2000, ooh, don't quote me, this is like an HR test. I think 2013, 2014, I was hired on as in a tenure track role. And I've been here ever since. And in that period, from 2015 to 2019, I served as the department head of aviation. But I have some amazing coworkers that took the helm of the department so that I could finish my doctorate. So that kind of that helped me out a whole lot. And so I would like to publicly thank that individual
there
on the podcast.
There you go. Yeah. Well, congratulations on your doctorate, Dr. Jordan Lyons.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here with us today. Thank you for being a part of the aviation program here for so long, for being so loyal to the program. Gage, tell us a little bit about you, man. How are
All
you?
All right. Well, my name is Gage McClinton. I'm a senior professional aviation major and MBA candidate. Right now I serve as the student body vice president. And I finished up the flight portion of my education over the summer, getting my flight instructor certificate. And so now I am working as a student finishing my undergrad and also on the flight end serving as an instructor. So it's opened my eyes to a lot of neat opportunities, and I've had a lot of cool experiences so far. I also am able to serve as the risk analysis board chairman, which is a really neat part of our program that Dr. Lyons can talk a bit about later on, I imagine. But yeah, so I currently am working on finishing my MBA, my undergrad, and moving my students along in the program.
There you go. Very involved. You're a student and a teacher in a lot of ways. So that's very cool. Also, SGA vice president.
Yes, sir.
Very involved with our student body. So that's very. Thank you both for being here today.
Sure.
It's especially good to have you guys on because aviation is such a unique program. It's not an experience that students outside of aviation, not that they can't relate to it, but in a way they can't because it's so special in of its own right. So talk a little bit about what makes aviation unique. What makes it stand out from other programs? There are obvious reasons, like the students in aviation fly planes,
right.
But it's a little deeper than that. So talk a little bit about that.
It is a little bit deeper. I think, and you kind of, that segued right into one of the things I wanted to talk about, mm-hmm. was that one of the things that makes aviation challenging or unique at not only Louisiana Tech, but in the United States, I could even be so bold and say globally, because there's only 36 programs in the world that are accredited for collegiate aviation, and we're proud to be on that short list. But one of the things that makes it challenging is students at 17, 18 years old find out very quickly how to balance their life. And that's a balance between the university, the traditional university experience, going to class, and hopefully doing some extracurriculars, maybe not as many as Gage, but being involved in campus while also completing that flight training. And that the flight training piece, a lot of people talk about earning your pilot's license. The training pipeline here at Louisiana Tech goes far beyond that. We're talking about earning a pilot's license, even though that Gage and I both know that that's not what we call it. We call it a pilot certificate. But going through private and then instrument and then commercial flying and then becoming a flight instructor, which I don't know, that's about a $60,000 investment in that training experience.
Wow, right.
And so we have students that have a great aptitude for the classroom and are really good academic students. Or on the opposite end, we have students that are really, really good stick and rudder pilots. But we're not looking for extremes. We're looking for a balance between the two. And students get really good at managing that. And Gage is a great example of how to do that successfully.
Yeah, what's it like for you? How long have you known that you wanted to be in aviation? Was it something that you decided a long time ago?
To be honest, I started my aviation journey junior high school. Mm-hmm. I was 17, and I was fully invested in going to IT. And if you know me a little bit better, you'll know that IT is not the personality type for me. And I have a couple certifications. I like was fully invested in network administration and security and all that kind of stuff. And I just kind of got where I was like, I don't want to sit in a closet.
Right, it just wasn't for you, right?
That's just not for me. I love people, and that's kind of why I ended up being VP, because I love people and I love getting involved in things and travel and things like that. And I wanted to find a career that would allow me to do that. And so I we travel a lot and with my family, and so ended up, we'd be flying, and I'd be like, I wonder what they're doing up there in the cockpit, you know, and you see the pilots walking down, and I wonder if that's a viable career option. Sure enough, it sure is. So I got invested in it, and I didn't know. I thought the only way to do it was military. The only way you become an airline pilot is through the military. And I knew there was maybe some big-name collegiate aviation programs, but I ended up finding tech, and I did some research and got my private pilot license before I came to tech.
Okay.
Really found out that that's what I wanted to do, and you know that I wanted to invest my time or whatever at tech to do that. And I to kind of speak to the as a student coming in, it is very difficult initially, because instead of just showing up and taking your 12 hours, you may be taking 12 hours, but you also have to meet with your instructor at least 3 times a week. If you really want to move through the program, you got to meet with your instructor. You have to do the FAA side of testing. So in a lot of courses, like Dr. Lyons teaches, Instrument Ground 2, one of our courses, you have to not only take the test in class, but at one point you have to go and drive to an FAA testing facility and take a knowledge test. And to do that and be successful, you have to study outside the classroom. And it's very involved. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. Not only do you have to balance your schoolwork, you need to balance your flying work, and you need to balance your ground knowledge and things like that. So I just kind of had a great instructor my first time, and I just was able to, I'd hate to say blow through it, but I was able to just move right along.
He smoked it.
Yeah. I was able to move right modest, along, and just was very motivated. I just loved it. I think that's part of it too. It wasn't that I was, you know, super intelligent or anything like that. Not to discredit myself, but I think that I just fell in love with it, and I just wanted to learn more about it and got super curious. And I couldn't be satisfied with just knowing this bit. I had to go the little extra step, and I wonder what that makes that happen, you know, things like that. So, and now balancing being an instructor and finishing classes is interesting, because not only if I say as a student, if, you know, my schoolwork gets hard, I can just lay off on flying for a little bit. I'll be okay. As an instructor, I can't have that option.
Right.
I have to continue flying. I have to continue. Not only is it a job, and now I have, you know, performance minimums to meet, and you know I'm expected to do my job as an instructor, but my students are also, hey, when are we going to meet? You know, so it's a little different now as an instructor, but I'd say as a student, it is a little challenging initially to kind of get up to pace with it and move along. But
if you it sounds like if you had to boil it down to how you do it, it's passion. It's
I would
that
say
that,
so.
That gives you that little bit extra.
And I think
help
you can identify, and not to, you know, talk about students, but I think you can identify even with some that I have personally, those that are truly deeply passionate about it, and those that are just moving light along and meeting the minimums. You know, and I think the private pilot course is challenging, but the instrument course, the next set, that's where you, I'm either going to do it or I'm not.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a make or break moment.
It's a make or break kind of deal, because it is a little difficult. But anyways, yeah, it's passion, I'd say.
Great. So do you know, I mean, it sounds like there are for sure lots of avenues that aviation can lead someone to. So do you know what exactly you want to do when you're
done
learning? I guess you're never done learning.
I'm not exactly sure. I definitely want to go in the airlines, but I'm also interested in the academic side of things in academia. Which I'm doing my MBA, so that could open some opportunities as far as the management side of, not necessarily in aviation as a whole, but maybe in our program specifically, if there's opportunities that open itself up or teaching.
Did you know that that was something you might want to do before you started
No,
being an instructor?
I I didn't quite think so. Right. I thought I was just straight to the airlines as soon as I got 1,000 hours. Mm-hmm. And I started teaching, and I really kind of fell in love with it in a one-on-one setting. And I had a buddy of mine who was an instructor as well, and he's graduated from the program, and he's working here at Tech, and he picked up a course to teach in the classroom mm-hmm. setting. And the more I talked to him about it, the more I was like, that may be something I'm interested in doing. And so we'll see what happens whenever I finish my undergrad, but it will be something that I will investigate.
Absolutely.
Fully, but definitely one day going to the airlines. So.
Gotcha. Well, you got some time to figure it out.
I so, do, yeah.
You got to take it a day at a time.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So I keep saying it, that aviation is such a unique program. So I'm sure that there are tons of activities and events that go on that maybe not a lot of the student body is aware of, and especially events that may have been impacted by the way things have changed over the last year and the effect that the pandemic has had on everybody and the way that things have shifted around. Mm-hmm. So now that things are sort of shifting in a different direction, how has that affected aviation?
Last quarter, mm-hmm. in one of my classes, I'm talking to the students, and the way I structure my classes, it's more of a conversation than me talking to them for the whole time. I like to have a good dialogue, and aviation students are more than happy to share their opinions on all kinds of things, which is awesome. But I was talking to them last quarter, and I mentioned AvFest, which is short for Aviation Festival, mm-hmm. and they gave me a deer in the headlights look. And so I paused for about 5 seconds, and I'm like, what is happening? This is one of the events that makes Louisiana Tech Aviation all by itself when you compare our program to others within the United States. Mm-hmm. It has been used as an exemplar, as best practice with alumni.
Okay.
But they didn't know what it was because of tornadoes mm-hmm. and hurricanes mm-hmm. and pandemics.
Right.
And I'm like, has it been that long? And it has. It's been 3 years since we've had an AvFest event. But, knock on wood, we're having one in April. So AvFest is always the last full weekend in April. And it's an opportunity for not only our alumni to come back, and that's really how it started, to get our alumni back on campus and networking with our current students, but also allows parents and other Tech family members to come in and just socialize, get caught up, figure out what's going on within the department, figure out what's going on within the industry. There's lots of food mm-hmm. to eat yourself into a food coma.
Nice.
You know, with fish fries and burger burns and a formal banquet. Mm-hmm. And the banquet is an opportunity where we award department scholarships to usually about 30 of our students. One of the criteria for those scholarships is a financial need. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm telling you that every aviation student is in financial need.
Sure, right.
Yeah. So just an opportunity to recognize academic achievement, performance at the airport, but also just really to get together once a year. Mm-hmm. And it has been, I don't want to use the word depressing, but it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, not being able to do this event, but we're able to do that. So AvFest is one of them. Another event that is very special to me and the program and our students for that matter. And Gage, I don't even know if you're aware of these. Gage, this is a great example. We can figure out if Gage knows about mock interviews. Maybe you've heard of them.
I've heard of them, yeah.
Mock interviews, it's a time where we get about 8 to 10 mm-hmm. of our alumni, airline alumni, back on campus, and they do airline-style interviews to our seniors. Our seniors specifically that are enrolled in an aviation professionalism course. And they put them through the ringer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, we want to make that interview harder than the real thing. And all of the students that have participated in those mock interview experiences have said that the real interview was, I don't want to say a joke, but.
They were ready.
They were ready.
They were ready, yeah.
They were prepared. And so we're looking forward to doing that in February.
Gotcha.
So mock interviews and AvFest are two of the events that we haven't done in 3 years.
Yeah.
That we're going to be able to cycle back in this academic year, and I'm very excited about that.
That's good. AvFest sounds like a lot of fun.
You're invited. It's
good. That was my next question. It sounds like it serves its purpose, but also just a celebration of the department and the program. So that's mm-hmm. really cool. So when it comes to things like AvFest and students connecting with alumni and even with the mock interviews and finding things like that, what is sort of a typical aviation student's journey in terms of knowing what they want to do versus finding out what their options are. So, like, how many different paths can aviation take you down? Gage has talked about quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
But what's what are sort of the avenues for a student as they go through the program?
I mentioned earlier before we started the podcast that I'd like to generalize. This is a generalization, mm-hmm. but I would say that the majority of our students engage. You jump in if I say something that's like, what? But there's three sure. primary paths. And the airline, which Gage mentioned, the airline mm-hmm. route, which historically was all military pilots, you know, the majority of our students take that path.
Gotcha.
I would say 75% to 80%.
Okay, gotcha.
The majority. Path two would be the corporate route, mm-hmm. which is what I used to do on the side before I became a straight up academic, which mm-hmm. like Gabe, I never thought I would do that, but I love it. But the corporate route would be flying for a business or flying for a family. That's very attractive because you may fly less or you may fly more, but you fly the equipment you want when you want. It's a little bit more, airlines are more predictable, but some people like that on-call pilot work.
It's more private in a way.
I was going to say your beeper beeps, but what's a beeper?
And it's cool. It's pretty neat.
It is neat. And you can make as much money as an airline pilot.
Right.
But going back to what we were talking about just a second ago is if you're doing it for the money, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
There you go. Passion.
It's passion,
yeah.
Straight up. Mm. But that's route two. And then, of course, route three would be the military.
Mm-hmm.
And we have graduates in all major airlines, all regional airlines, all branches of the military.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say all corporate avenues because there's so many of them.
Right.
But they're all over. Major corporations, families, all of it. So those are the three primary ones. But airlines are, their need is high, and they're paying really, really well
mm-hmm.
and have been for a few years. Even when they weren't paying well, which is, heck, 5-6 years ago, our graduate placement rate was still 100%.
There you go.
So students get jobs.
Yeah.
But now they're getting jobs and they're getting paid comfortably in their first year, mm-hmm. which is great. So.
And it sounds like it's one of those things, like we've touched on, that if you get through the program and you get to the point where it's time for you to get a job, you're well-equipped not only because of the prestige of the program, but because you've had to struggle, for lack of a better word, to get through, because you have to find that balance and
right.
find that passion and get through it. So by the time you get to the end, your toughest challenge is almost out of the way,
right.
you know, so you're well-equipped for that job.
I would say one thing, too, that is I don't think we've mentioned. So the major is professional aviation.
Mm-hmm.
The required minor is aviation management.
Gotcha.
So there's a whole nother sect of mm-hmm. aviation-related courses that are kept in-house and everything, but it's aviation management type things. So not only do students have opportunities in all of the aviation, the flying side of things, they also are prepared to go out. We have one CFI that just left us. He went out and picked up an airport manager job. And so not only are students prepared for the flying side of things, they're also prepared, I don't want to say land side, but they're prepared for the...
I like it.
they're prepared for the ground ops and
right.
the management and that side of things. And it's cool because not only can you go and you understand how to fly the planes, but you understand the management mm-hmm. practices of the company you're working for. And if an employer not only asks you to, hey, can you fly this plane for me, but can you manage this plane for me?
Mm-hmm.
Can you manage the finances of keeping this plane ready to go at all times, then you're prepared outside of the cockpit. So our program's pretty neat and structured how it like that. So
it supports our primary goal of creating that balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you know, not just flying.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right before I joined Tech. It was actually when I was a student here, where they mandated that aviation management minor,
mm-hmm.
and we've never looked back. And that is a huge. I'm glad you brought that up, Gage.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge factor that makes Tech different than just going to a flight school.
Right.
You know, just creating that awesome experience of getting exposed to areas outside of the cockpit.
It sounds like there's tons of crossover. That was my thought. But it also all kind of sounds like two separate degrees, because it's two separate sides of the same sort of industry.
And I'm glad you said that. It is another degree,
because mm-hmm.
we have a 4-year baccalaureate degree in aviation management as well. Which is a popular spot for a lot of students. But most of the incoming students at Tech, they see bright, shiny mm-hmm. airplanes, the latest technology you can get, and we're blessed to have that equipment. And a special shout out to our system and the state of Louisiana and Dr. Geis
mm-hmm.
for backing us up on that aircraft purchase. Amazing for our students. But
mm-hmm.
there's so many things to do in aviation beyond getting in that cockpit and flying. you know, there are different roles for pilots, and it's not just flying.
Gotcha. So it's, we've talked multiple times about how it's a unique program. It's a unique sort of department here at Tech compared to other students and their journeys and their majors. What makes the aviation program here stand out nationally, maybe even globally? What separates us from other aviation programs around the country?
Sure. One of my responsibilities within the department outside of teaching is to assist with our accreditation process, specifically programmatic accreditation. It's a huge point for me, and personally and professionally, simply because, like I mentioned before, we're on a very short list of institutions within the world that offer a program that's accredited through the Aviation Accreditation Board International. We are very proud of that status, and that status means that we meet a performance standard criteria across the board: student quality, faculty quality, equipment quality, safety. That's kind of important in an aviation program.
Big time.
Our relationship with our alums. All of these areas are evaluated by this external accrediting body, and we have 100% stakeholder buy-in and have for quite some time. We were one of the first in the country to be accredited through AABI, and we've perfected that process. That's why accreditation exists, right?
Yeah.
To get better and better. And we've perfected that process and gotten better and better every year. And it's so important to me that I wrote my dissertation on it. And I wrote my dissertation on the value of accreditation, what contextual variables may influence compliance with existing criteria, and also, most importantly, adapting to this unprecedented industry demand for our graduates. How do we do this complex assessment process when our faculty and staff are leaving so fast that we may not be able to get hired, new hires in fast enough to continue that accreditation process? And it's not a one-man or one-woman show. It requires a team to be successful. And so I looked at, you know, how are programs doing that? And believe it or not, programs are using their alums to help supplement some of those decisions.
Gotcha.
Well, be part of the decision-making process.
So the program here is accredited, and it's that in of itself is, like you said, a short list. And so being accredited is one thing, but doing it well and doing it standing out, and we do it well here.
Yes.
Yes.
I am proud to say that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we also have an amazing safety record. I'm knocking on wood
again.
There you go. But I have had parents ask me, you know, how do you do this? How do you have 20-year-olds teaching 18-year-olds how to fly $400,000 airplanes and do it safely? And I say that we hire the right people.
It's remarkable. I'm getting ready to send one of my students who's just turned 18, and I'm about to turn 21,
right,
and I'm about to send him on a 200 nautical mile cross country from here to Jackson. So I'm like a worried dad on FlightAware reloading, and I'm telling him, be safe, be careful, get off your phone. But it is remarkable, the safety record. But I think and he's an expert on this, but I can just a little bit from my experience. We have a awesome culture in our program. The safety culture is really cool. And any safety expert will tell you that to have a safe program, you've got to have a great safety culture, one that promotes and encourages safe behavior and discourages those bad actors that are, you know, unsafe or bad practices. And we're always working on it. We're having a CFI meeting tonight, so all of our instructors meet monthly, and that's just one of the things that we do. We're meeting tonight, and we discuss safety topics and student-related topics and practice topics. So all these different meetings that we have the risk analysis board, which is a student and instructor comprised group, which meets and advises on different safety-related topics. But I would say, going back to the general topic of how we stand out from a student perspective, there are a lot of big universities, not to name any, but some are located in South Florida, that are very expensive and will get you the same exact thing at the end of the day. A four-year accredited degree that are very expensive, come with a lot of, you know, glamour and whatever. And at the end of the day, it's the same thing.
It happens
and,
here, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember when I was looking at it, I, to be honest, I, you know, I saw that big university, and I said, well, that's where I want to go. That's the best one in the country. And I look at it, and I was like, all right, well, that's it's a little expensive, but, you know, whatever. And then I was looking around, and my mom ended up actually stumbling on, well, somebody said something about Louisiana Tech. So what about that? And I looked it up, and it I'm like, well, it's at an uncontrolled airport. It's a small university, smaller. And but when I stepped on campus, I was like, okay, this is different than what was looked at. And when I looked at the price tables, that was also a little bit
revealing as well.
But the neatest thing about it is, in our program, you show up day one. We had a student, I had one of my students this fall quarter, he showed up day one. He got registered for classes. He showed up to his first day of class, and the next day he met with me, and we were in a plane. And I think that's something unique about our program is the first quarter at Tech, you are in a plane, or you know what I mean. You're flying, and you're meeting with an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Some universities, you have to wait until a certain point to start flying. So it's hard because we talked about how unique it is and how challenging it is. Imagine not doing the flying part of it, being in a plane, some students not having been in a plane before they came to Tech, until you've taken two or three semesters of challenging ground courses.
Right.
If I got in a plane and I said, this isn't for me after I've done all that, I would be so upset,
yeah.
You know? So it's neat because not only do students know quicker if they're passionate about it, but they're able to move in the program quicker because of the opportunities that are on day one in our program. So
there you go. You spoke to sort of what that is relatable to every Tech student, I think. The bigger is not always better.
Yeah.
Students come here and they like it here because it's a more close-knit school. They can develop relationships with their instructors, their teachers, and they feel they get that sort of one-on-one.
Yeah, I've been saying this whenever I was running for vice president and I was talking about this with the student body. One of the neat things about Tech is that it is a small university with the resources of a major, big, huge university. I mean, we have in our department specifically, we have the instructors and the staff, specifically the faculty. Dr. Lyons and the other instructors, their experience is amazing. You have such knowledgeable instructors, and the resources, the planes out there, so nice.
They are. If you're listening, you need to find some photos of the planes we have because they are they're pretty spectacular.
It is state of the art. I mean, it is such nice equipment to fly. It's honestly a privilege to be able to teach in the aircraft, and it's so cool because it allows us to really expose the students to more than just, and to kind of give a little backdrop, there's steam gauge, which is your traditional analog instruments, and then there's our fancy G1000, basically big computer screens that we have. And it's cool because we get to expose students to some things that they'll find in bigger, we talked about corporate aviation, that's what you'll find in corporate aviation, usually in those nicer, bigger airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our resources, our faculty, here at Tech in our program is really awesome while keeping it close-knit, smaller, where you're not just one little fish in a huge sea. You know, it's a smaller, close-knit community.
It's Tech family, right?
Oh, Tech family, that's it.
And, you know, we say that. We tell, as one example, we tell AABI, our accrediting body, the visiting team. They come every 5 years. And we get a new team every year, but we tell them about the culture at Louisiana Tech and the culture within our department. And they're like, oh, okay. But then they show up at the campus. And you can see it in the debriefs, in the reports. They're like, this is real. And I'm thinking, yeah, I told you it was real. that's probably one of the main reasons that I'm still here. Not in the airline. I love it here. And I knock on wood, I hope to retire here. I love it. So I love Ruston so much, I married local.
There you go.
But, blessed.
There you go. That's what we like to hear. You mentioned planes. I mean, let's talk planes.
Let's talk planes.
Everything I've learned about aviation today pretty much has come from you guys sitting here today talking. So let's just talk about, I guess, maybe different types of planes that we have. Maybe what's your favorite type of plane to fly? I mean, I'm not even totally sure the question to ask, but I'm sure you've got all sorts of information.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Gage, hit it.
Well, we have – so at Tech, we have a Cessna Skyhawk. That's what we have. I think we have 13 of those. 172 Model S's. and I forget the year, 2008 model?
17?
A little sooner. Sorry, 2017. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I was thinking 18 or 17, but I said 2008.
2017
models with the G1000s. We also have some Piper Arrows with retractable gear, so our students are able to get complex experience. And basically, you have aircraft that have fixed landing gear, tricycle gear, and then you have aircraft that are able to retract their landing gear, and the FAA deems that a complex airplane. And so for one of our courses, our commercial course, the student actually has to have a certain amount of time as pilot in command of a complex airplane. And so that allows us to accomplish that. And they have nice avionics. And we also, and this is not officially through Louisiana Tech, but the Davisons have so kindly allowed us to do some multi-engine instruction through their new Piper Seminole, which I actually just completed over the summer.
Two engines.
Yes. So you have a single engine and you have multi-engine planes. Multi just describing one that has more than one.
Right.
Okay, just good.
just clarifying.
Just clarifying. But it is a Piper, so it looks very similar to the Piper Arrow that students have already been flying, except this one has two engines, and it also has the G1000 cockpit display as well. So it's pretty neat. I would say the most fun I've had in my training was had in the Seminole.
There you go.
It was something about having two engines, just you felt like a real pilot. I don't know.
So what is the difference? Is it more power?
Well,
is it?
It's definitely more power. It is faster, very fast. So one thing that you have to manage, we talk about managing tasks a lot and back and forth between classroom and work, but specifically in cockpit, you have a lot of cockpit management tasks going on. So even in the single engine, in the Skyhawk, even though things are happening slower, you're still having to manage running a checklist and doing this for a land. In the Seminole, it's happening twice as fast.
Wow.
And so when you're doing like instrument procedures where I'm having to hit designated points at designated speeds and designated altitudes and you're managing all this stuff, you're coming up on everything so much quicker. And so that was one thing that I really had to adapt to was the task management side of things, especially when I headed over to Monroe, which is a towered environment. So they have a controller and your license is at risk if you get in too bad of a bind. They say, hey, we're going to talk to the FAA about you. You know, that kind of deal.
That was a nice way to say that, Gabe.
Yeah, it is a nice way to say it. But anyways, when you go over there and they're giving you instructions and you're having to comply with that and do this and do that, it was really fun, though, because it opened up the door after I got my multi to new opportunities, talking about corporate, in El Dorado. I got the opportunity. I work as one of the backup pilots for a King Air, which is a really big multi-engine plane. So like the plane that we have, the Davisons allow us to teach out of, the Seminole has two 180 horsepower engines. Mm-hmm. The King Air has two 730 horsepower turboprop engines.
Wow.
So you're cruising, you're moving fast.
Man, sounds like it.
And it's a turboprop as compared to a piston engine. So piston engine, just your typical car type engine. Turboprop, it's a jet engine that has a propeller slammed on the front of it. So it's pretty cool. I'd say out of all the planes that I've flown, that the King Air has been a really neat experience. But the planes at Tech are
of course
just
yeah.
as neat, you know.
Absolutely. So. But it does sound like power and speed can make it more fun sometimes.
Oh yeah, don't let any aviation major fool you. They're always looking for faster and bigger.
Always.
It's goes to coolness level goes up with speed and power.
Sometimes the new students say, you know, I want to fly something a little bit faster in training. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you have to pay for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? That is the tricky part, too.
So, you know, it's finding that balance between what students need for industry and what they are willing to pay for.
Right.
Because the students must pay for that flight training experience just like any other business, you know, flight school. So we operate that flight school as part of our academic department. But, you know, we have to keep it affordable. And one of the ways we do that is flying the most popular general aviation training airplane in the world, and that's the Cessna Skyhawk.
Yeah, that's also another unique sort of setup. It's a flight school attached to a department and a program, which is not really anything that other departments around here sort of function as, you know.
Right.
So, well, guys, thank you for joining me here today. Before we leave, this aviation program might be an attractive option to somebody out there listening, or it might just be straight up interesting enough for them to want to know. how do you get into this program?
I can answer that one, Gage. If you're interested in aviation, either as a high school student or, heck, even as a current tech student, I'll start with the students that haven't started college yet.
Mm-hmm.
What you would need to do is apply to Louisiana Tech as a university, and then that university application automatically submits an application to our department. And most collegiate aviation programs now are selective admissions.
Mm-hmm.
And we went selective admissions a few years ago. And so once you apply to the university, that application, again, gets sent to the department. And we would want you to have that application submitted to the university by December 15th. So we're coming up on next year's deadline pretty quick,
right,
being the second.
Right.
Apply by December the 15th and also complete a campus visit.
Mm-hmm.
And that campus visit is critical because we want our department to give that student and the parents or those families the information they need to make an informed decision, specifically about the commitment, everything
mm-hmm.
we've talked about, really.
Yeah.
The commitment and the cost and everything up front. We want students to know that up front. So that December 15th deadline qualifies you, or it's an application for the following academic year, and we make selection in February, March timeframe for the upcoming academic year. Current students that are interested in a major change to Louisiana Tech should stop by our aviation office
mm-hmm.
in Davison Hall 320 and let the staff know that they're interested, and they will put their name on a roster, and we evaluate those major change requests on a quarterly basis, and those major change requests are based on cumulative GPA.
Gotcha.
So 3.0 is the minimum,
mm-hmm.
but the driving force behind the number of students that we can comfortably and safely admit is based on our instructor resources. So as we create,
shout out to Gage.
Yeah,
that's right.
as we train more Gages, we can enroll more students.
Gotcha.
So
there you go. Thank you for answering that question, and thank you guys both for being here today. I know I learned a lot. I hope everybody listening learned a lot. Gage, good luck finishing things out and moving along in your career. Dr. Lyons, thank you so much for being here and being a part of the Tech family and helping mold our students. Especially our aviation students, which, as we learned today, are unique in more ways than one. So thank you guys very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. This was really fun.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Beyond 1894. Please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about this episode, check out our show notes. Beyond 1894 is produced by Louisiana Tech University's Office of University Communications.